AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
Welcome into the bullpen. Myself, Ryan McDonald, along with Sean Mapes, Cam Smith, and Johnny Belmer behind the glass. You can find me on Twitter at SackByBMAC. Sean's on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes. Cam is at Clutch City Cam, and Johnny is on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. And we're flipping the script a little bit because, honestly, I didn't know the Texans game was starting now until John told us in our group text. I just assumed, like, every Texans preseason game ever that it was at night. But, no, it's going on here in just a matter of minutes. So we'll obviously be live in the moment with overreactions, moment by moment, of Texans Giants.
It's the third preseason game. It's the dress rehearsal game. So they have to do it at noon.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. This year, they're a little more prime time. And, like, last year, that would have been fitting because, like, every game was at noon. And in most of Texans history, every game was at noon. But, yeah, this year, they've actually got, like, 5-6 games at night. So, right before this game starts off, and we'll start Texans here in the first two segments, get into some Astros later in the hour. But before this game kicks off, gentlemen, we know the starters are playing. I saw the news that Joe Mixon's going to get out there. I don't know how long they'll be there. I'm going to guess probably a quarter.
It's the dress rehearsal game.
Yeah, I know, but they're not doing the 2.5 quarters like they used to. Like back in my day, Arian Foster was playing to the end of the third quarter. They're not doing that.
Going to play one drive.
No, he's not. They're going to play more than that. They played two drives last game. It's going to go off from there, Cam. But like, what do we want to see? Like, it's a preseason game. But what do we? Don't say don't get hurt because that is the most cop out answer you can give.
Yeah, that's all
some people at the station do that. It drives
me
crazy.
It's the preseason. That's all.
Like, what do you care about most in this game, Texans Giants? I think the obvious one is Joe Mixon's debut. Like, what do we want to see from this game?
Less even Joe Mixon's debut, just more effective running game. I would like to see the guards and the center and obviously then the running back. Get some open lanes going. Get some push.
It's been rough so far.
No more of this, you know, Damian Pierce looked awful with his 1 yard per carry. You know who looked good, though? Cam Akers with his 2.6 yards per carry. No.
It's been a low bar.
That's quite a drastic difference, though, Sean.
That's almost tripling his yards per carry.
I need over 3 yards per carry from some of these running backs.
Okay, the bar from Sean A. Mapes says he wants to see 3 yards per carry. Over 3 yards per carry. Which, look, I mean, obviously the Giants made the big splash. Oh, my God, I hate you. The Giants made the big splashy move, adding Brian Burns in the offseason that we got to see on Hard Knocks. And their defensive line has been great. Probably top five or so defensive line in the NFL. So if they do fulfill Sean's wish and go over 3 yards per carry, that'll actually mean something. And from everything I've heard about, you know, the little that Joe Mixon has practiced, there is a difference when he's in the game. The running game does look better. So what else do you want to see from this game, Cam?
I would like to see some consistency amongst the O-line, and I'm actually really excited to see Kamari Lassiter play.
Yeah, no, that's good. And kind of adding to that, sticking with the secondary, I want to see how the safeties look. Obviously not facing the greatest passing attack with Daniel Jones, but I was a little disappointed, and we're not going to get much into it, but the Texans not signing Justin Simmons, because we know Jimmy Ward's not going to stay healthy. He's not going to stay healthy. He's, 31, 32, didn't stay healthy last year. And then one of your other safety, because you got Petrie now more a nickel than safety, and your other safety is a third-round pick with Bullock. So I'd like to see some consistent play with the safeties, because I'm feeling pretty good about the two corners, obviously, with Stingley and Kamari Lassiter, but the safeties, I mean, they're the last. I don't know if you know this, Sean. They're the last line of defense. So if they're not the deepest of the deepest, that could cause some problems.
That Justin Simmons contract had me flabbergasted.
Yeah, 1 year, $8 million. Like
anybody could have signed him.
Both him and Diggs were.
Yeah, especially for the Texans, they have over $20 million in cap space.
Yeah,
and they have a need, and we know, and we'll get into this here in a little bit, but we know they were in on Matthew Judon, which would have cost just as much or more. So I don't get
in on him.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. They probably offered significantly less than what the Atlanta Falcons did with the third-round pick. But, yeah, it's just weird that there's an obvious need there, yet they don't go out and try to make the move and secure one of the few remaining holes on this team.
In Kalen Bullock, we trust.
That's kind of what the Texans are telling us. They seem like they obviously felt comfortable at left guard with Kenyon Green. They didn't really make any moves in the offseason to shore that up. They obviously feel – I mean, obviously they added Bullock to the team, but they're comfortable with the current group as it is. I'm less comfortable with that, but we'll start to see some answers to that as Texans-Giants are about to kick off here on ABC. So, Stephon Diggs, we heard a lot of reports this week. I know DJ Bieniemy had some firsthand accounts about how good Stephon Diggs looked, the chemistry with C.J. Stroud, and we've spent – well, it feels like 5 years talking about who's going to be the wide receiver one, who's going to be the wide receiver three, who's going to get the most targets, and blah, 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 blah. But one of the talking points that's emerged from this Diggs conversation, and if you have any thoughts and want to join in the conversation, definitely give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But I'm getting so, so tired of hearing about, well, if you look from week 10 on, Diggs' production went way down. Yeah, okay, great. Look at his first 9 weeks. It wasn't like the people act because like his production from week 10 to through the end of the season. Oh my! By the way, he had a pretty good game in week 18, so it wasn't like it was the entire rest of the season. But people act like this was a sign that Stephon Diggs, now on the wrong side of 30, has just completely fallen over the hill. But you look at his first half numbers, and he's effing great. I mean, look at his first half numbers as I'm pulling it up here. I'll read them through as super quickly as I can. He's 10 for 102, 7 for 66, 8 for 111, 6 for 120, 8 for 121, 10 for 100, 6 for 58, 9 for 70, I mean, 6 for 86. He's great. What changed is Josh Allen throws 1,000 picks. They bring in a new offensive coordinator who probably is looking as like, man, we need to stop hyper-targeting one player. Focus on the running game, maybe go to the intermediate part of the field more, focus on the tight ends, so we can limit some of these turnovers. And that took Stephon Diggs further out of the offense. I think it's intellectually dishonest to say, well, Stephon Diggs fell off from weeks 9 to 10 in his career. I know drop-offs can happen for a wide receiver over the age of 30 quickly. They didn't happen from weeks 9 to 10.
Yeah, it's a lot like saying that, hey, the Buffalo Bills started winning games once they stopped throwing to Stephon Diggs, so Texans shouldn't throw to Stephon Diggs. It's a lot like saying the Astros have had the best record in baseball since Kyle Tucker's been hurt, therefore they're a better team without Kyle.
Yeah, it's just, what do you make of this whole thing, Cam? I mean, you're obviously more of a Chargers fan, so a little bit from the outside here, but what do you make of this whole conversation about Stephon Diggs?
When he was with Minnesota, I could have maybe seen him on this list. But what diva stuff is he actually doing these days? Like, he wanted the ball more in Buffalo. I don't think that's being a diva. That's knowing that you're the number one weapon on that team and that you can feast with Josh Allen. And then to your point of the stats falling off, yeah, they switched offensive coordinators midway through the season and became a run-the-ball team. And that's why James Cook had those, like, went from like a top 15 fantasy running back to like a top 5 midway through the season, because they totally switched their philosophy offensively. And then Stephon Diggs comes here, and all you hear out of that locker room is how great of like a leader he is. I think people are just need something to talk about, and because of Diggs' past, they're putting him up number one. But it's kind of like Brandon Ayuk. Why is he number two? Because he wants a big contract extension? Isn't that what every athlete wants?
Yeah, so what Cam is referencing, there was a list that came out from I had the source and then I lost it, but it's basically, it was the top 5 biggest divas in the NFL, and that list in order with Stephon Diggs, Brandon Ayuk, Deontay Johnson, Aaron Rodgers, and George Pickens, which, I mean, I think the Aaron Rodgers one is really not even worthy of, it doesn't need an explanation. But some of the, a lot of the other guys in the list are just guys that want, either want the ball or want a new contract, which I think everybody in the NFL either wants the ball more or wants a bigger contract. So, yeah, I think people sometimes just get in other the players' pockets a little too much for my liking. But let's getting back to Diggs and like this worry about his exit from Buffalo and what it would mean for his time here with the Texans. Like, I get the idea, like, hey, he forced his way out of Minnesota. He forced his way out of Buffalo. Seemingly, he didn't have a good relationship with Sean McDermott or Josh Allen in Buffalo. There are reasons for concern with Stephon Diggs, but it's not the production. Like, that's kind of the part where I cannot accept an argument that, well, he dropped off because they decided, because of Josh Allen's turnovers, to run the ball more and focus on the middle of the field to the guys like Dalton Kincaid, who they drafted in the first round. So I don't buy the production. If you want to tell me you think he's going to become a problem off the field, maybe whine about targets because Nico and Tank are getting more targets, fine. I guess I could see that argument. I see how that's a possibility. But at the same time, he's on a one-year deal, and he's trying to get another contract. So, yeah, I'm really tired of the Diggs diva conversation, and I can't wait for the season to get here so we can start answering some of these questions.
Yeah, I think in 2 weeks, like, we stop talking about the change from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady in the Bills offense last year. Like, I think once we get the full offenses on the field for a full game, like, that's when I think a lot of this kind of goes away.
Well, and it also doesn't help when people see, like, little clips taken from, like, practices or scrimmages, and they see Diggs, like, in somebody's face, and they just automatically assume that
That happened in the second preseason game, where they came off the field after the Tank Dell touchdown, and there's a video that came out of Diggs and Stroud talking on the sideline. There's no audio of this. I don't buy lip readers.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yeah, and then I saw, like, well over 50% of the people reacting to the video online, like, Diggs is already complaining about not getting... What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, one, we don't know what he's saying, but it's clearly from the hand gestures and the way Diggs is talking and the way CJ is responding to him. It clearly looks like Diggs is talking about a look the defense gave him. It's like, hey, if I see this, I'm going to break it off here. Look for me here. That's what they should be doing. But yet, because people are so up in their feelings about Stephon Diggs and the way he ended up Buffalo, it turns into, Stephon Diggs is the biggest diva in the NFL. He's already complaining at Stroud. It's just, stop. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. I mean, it sucks because it's like I guess technically he painted that picture of himself years past, but like people mature, they grow up. I mean, the dude's still not even, is even in his 30s yet?
Yeah, like, he is. He's 31.
Okay. I mean, people can change, they can mature, and it's just unfortunate that like he's still getting that label here when nobody here in the Texans locker room or players or anything has come out to reflect that. Like, it's the opposite.
Yeah,
like,
he's been the opposite.
Yeah.
It's been about how great of a leader he is. And listen, even if you want to be the most pessimistic about this, normally year one goes really well.
Yeah, and that's all he's here for. Yeah, because even in Minnesota and Buffalo, where he forced his way out by the end.
Buffalo, he played there for 4 years.
Year one was fine. Year one was, it was still the honeymoon
phase.
First 2 years
were fine.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I mean, look, and then that was, I know some people didn't like it, some people did, but I mean, that would be why the Texans make the move to convert his salary to basically just a one-year deal. Give him a little bit extra money, but then go ahead and alleviate the problem of the year three, year four with Stephon Diggs, especially as he starts to age. All right, we got to get out on the other side of the break. We'll talk about what's happening here in this Texans game. Texans defense forces a three and out, and Stingley almost gets a pick six, and now the CJ Stroud is on the move. They picked up a first down, including a completion to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Diva.
Keeping him happy.
Keeping him happy. Yeah, like, hey, yeah, Diggs not squawking now.
Got to feed him early.
All right, well, on the other side of the break, we'll talk about what's going on in the Texans-Giants game here and the attempted move to bring Matthew Judon to town for the Texans. That and more when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
We'll be right back.
The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen as we come back from break here. Stephon Diggs got another touch. So CJ Stroud keeping the biggest diva in the NFL happy as they get down towards the goal line, throw a fade pass. Looks like it is out of bounds. That looked like it was targeted to Nico Collins. It was indeed. Nico Collins had a pretty good catch along the sideline right as we were going to break. Broke a couple tackles and picked up more yards. Texans right now in the red zone on their first possession. Starters all in the game, obviously. So a little bit of news from the Texans this week, unexpectedly. I mean, there's obviously some positions. We talked about one of them in the last segment where they could look to add someone. I think a lot of us thought maybe they look to add another left guard to compete with Kenyon Green, maybe add some depth at linebacker, some depth at safety. But after we found out Matthew Judon was traded from the Patriots to the Falcons in exchange for a third-round pick, the pass rusher Matthew Judon, multiple-time Pro Bowler, we found out apparently the Texans were in on it. Now, maybe you guys saw this piece of news and I missed it. I don't know what the Texans' offer was. It seems like the offer was less, obviously, than what the Patriots did with the third rounder. Otherwise, Judon might be in the Texans.
I was going to say.
And I can't imagine them offering as high as a third-round pick for a position where they already feel pretty good at as far as pass rusher. What were your initial thoughts on a team with, you know, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter? You get Danico Autry back in 6 weeks. You feel pretty good about some of your depth with Jerry Hughes and forgetting the guy they brought in off the street.
Derek Barnett.
Yeah, Derek Barnett. You feel pretty good, I think, about your pass rushers, yet the Texans were at least kicking the tires on bringing in Matthew Judon and adding him to the roster. What were your thoughts when you saw that news?
I think that Nick Cassero is in on everybody. Meaning, like, if this player has any interest in him, he's going to call, whether there's a 5% chance of him actually doing it or 100% chance of him bringing in. I also think it's one of those things where, because it was a third-round pick and it was the Falcons and one other team, those obviously, their expectations for those teams were lower than the Texans. So I think, obviously, for New England, it's like, why would you even trade them to the Texans, who are probably going to be able to give you, what, the 25th pick?
Yeah, you'd have to give them a better round pick because your pick's going to be lower than the – or worse than the Patriots.
Yeah, or have to give them, like, a fifth and swap it for, like, a sixth. So, like, I think the asking price for the Texans was going to be a little higher. Now, if they were willing to trade him for a fourth, I think that Nick Cassero would have done that all day, every single day. But I think because it was a third – and because the other teams that were in the market, too, could give you better round picks in that third round or better overall picks in the third round, I think that's kind of what pushed Cassero away from – I mean, not even away from this, just it not happening.
Yeah, I imagine the
– just the price is too high?
Yeah, he was in on it when it was like, yeah, a fourth and maybe a next year's sixth, and then the Falcons come in with a better offer and they don't match it. So I think it just says more about – again, how, like Cam said, Nick Cassero is just kind of in on everybody, where he's going to be looking for the spots along the margins, especially when we assume that he's offering a way lower price. That when the price was low, he was in on them. Once it got higher, he was out. And that's something, I mean, we talked about Stephon Diggs, where they got Stephon Diggs because they traded out of the first round for 2 second-round picks and traded one of the second-round picks for Stephon Diggs. So he is going to be creative. He is going to make moves that are, I guess, a level deeper than we think, because when they trade out the first round, we're like, oh, that's because they're going to pick a defensive tackle and then a cornerback.
Yeah, maybe they don't like the perceived position we thought they were going with the value there, so you move back to another position. And that wasn't it.
Nope, a week later they trade for Stephon Diggs. And then you think, oh, they got him for 3 years, so he's cost-controlled. He's going to – oh, nope, they just dropped
him. Same thing with Joe Mixon. They get him like, oh, great, he's only got 1 year left. They're just going to ride his old legs to the finish line. It's like, oh, no, they actually –
So I think that there is a little bit of, we only ever see, I mean, this is true for all front offices and all teams, but especially with the Texans, that we're only seeing like a small sliver of what their plans are, especially when it's moves that don't happen. Like, it's hard to prove, like, to prove what they're offering, B, what their plan was. Okay, say they do make the deal for Matt Judon. What was their idea with? Was it just going to be a four down, like a, you know, a rush front on third and longs of Judon, Anderson, Hunter, and Autry when he comes back? Like, oof, is that that
man,
that could work?
And that then, that and gives on, me pants tint. And then think
the
about that.
The other two downs are when it's not obvious passing situations. You just pick two out of three and you keep them all fresh. And obviously, we doubt that they would probably give Judon an extension. But
no, I don't
again,
think so.
You'd probably
you never know. You never know with Nick Stereo.
You would have doubted that they give Joe Mixon an extension. So yeah, it's interesting, and I think in general, I like the fact they're in on it just because it speaks to their aggression and the fact they are going to turn over different rocks to, hey, if this is a cheap way to improve this team, let's make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, not to state the super obvious thing that was a part of the conversation when they added Diggs. Thank you, Sean, for the permission to state the super obvious thing. But, you know, C.J. Stroud's on the rookie contract, so you have this window over the next 2 to 3 seasons where – you can make super aggressive moves and push the salary cap to its limit, although they still got $20 million on the books or room on the books.
To the limit.
To the limit, yeah, like the Jags lady said. Because you have that window right now to do it. It is interesting because I think a lot of the reaction when it came out, I'll speak for my own host on the Killer Bees, that was their reaction. Like, why would you make this move? Are you not telling us something about Will Anderson's ankle injury? Why would you look to add another pass rusher when you already have Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, and Denico Autry, plus, you know, Barnett and Jerry Hughes? But I think you hit on something important there, Sean. One, you can have those sub pass rush formations where you maybe move Danielle Hunter and Denico Autry inside and have Will Anderson and Judon on the edge, and holy crap, you know, yes, good luck to the other team on the field trying to block those four guys. But let's also be real about it. I mean, Danielle Hunter, he's not old, but he's, you know, getting up there a little bit. Will Anderson has had some injury problems. And no one, especially, oh, there is a pick six for the Houston Texans. Touchdown, about to be 7-0.
That was a horrible throw.
Oh, Jalen Petrie looks like he caught it. There was some pressure on Daniel Jones, forced him to a bad throw as he was backing up into the end zone, and Jalen Petrie stepped in front and took it to the house.
And that's a good sign right there, because they're using Petrie.
It's a good sign that they had a pick six?
Yes.
We got
but
breaking
I'm saying,
news, Johnny.
More because it's Petrie, because they're using him like they did in Baylor, where they're keeping him closer to the box instead of like playing center field and trying to take all these
that's
gambles.
That's way more of his strength.
This is Petrie's strength right here. So, like, what an exceptional
up front,
start.
By the line, read and react.
Also,
I agree with that.
Daniel Jones has been itching to throw an interception since the first drive.
Yeah.
But also,
the new beard didn't help? I mean, it had Kay Adams all flustered trying to talk to him with his new sexy beard, but it didn't seem to bother the Texans.
I think most of the throws I've seen Daniel Jones throw this this game have been heavily contested.
Stinkley, we talked about earlier. Stingley almost dropped
like it
the
was
pick.
Thrown too Stingley.
Yeah, it was thrown. Like, he did have to slightly step in front, but yeah, basically, I mean, if Stingley doesn't drop it, there's a pick six on the first drive as well. So Daniel Jones off to a great start. If you watch the Hard Knocks, the offseason Hard Knocks with the Giants, I mean, they're trying to tell you they like Daniel Jones, but if you watch that show, like, you know, they didn't really want to still be here with Daniel Jones. They're just kind of stuck there because of the contract they gave him. I don't even remember where we were at with Judon. Oh, Matthew Judon.
I think a big piece of that was the fact that he hit, like, 1 year left on your contract. Like, you just gave up a second round pick for Diggs and converted it to a 1 year contract. So I think the fact that you were going to have to give up a third for a guy that you might not bring back after giving up a second for a guy that you might not bring back, I think that's just a high asking price. If Judon had 2 years left,
well, it's
a
high asking price when you're strengthening a strength and not fixing a weakness.
Yeah.
Like, if this was fixing a weakness somewhere where they didn't have a lot of good players, I think, I think Nick Caserio would have made this move. But yeah, spending a third to strengthen the strength, even though I think it makes sense because, I mean, one, you have the sub packages where you could put all four of them on the field, and two, I mean, We've seen Will Anderson get hurt towards the end of last year. Danielle Hunter's not the youngest guy in the league, and guys don't play 100% of play. So there's going to be opportunity. And Danico Autry's out for 6 weeks. Yeah. So there would have been, had they made the move, plenty of opportunity to put Matthew Judon on the field.
Yeah, and not to mention, Judon missed 13 games last year. He got hurt in like game four. So it's not like he's 100%. I mean, he might be now, but obviously last year he got hurt and missed the majority of the season. So.
Yeah, I think it also shows that, I mean, we mentioned the fact that the Falcons signed
Justin Simmons,
the Titans signed Quandre Diggs, and those are both free agents that you thought the Texans would be in on, just looking at the depth chart and be like, oh, that spot looks a little light.
A little weak, yeah.
Why don't they sign someone there? And I think this kind of doubles down on what we saw this offseason, that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio especially value and put a big emphasis on pass rushers and that front seven. And that is how they are looking to build this defense. So if you are going to build depth at one position or to overload one position group with talent, it looks like D'Amico Ryans wants to allocate those chips in the front seven.
It's the D-line and cornerbacks. It's like you can never have too many good D-line and cornerbacks.
And to Sean's point, D'Amico told us that when the offseason started. Yeah. Like his exit press conference after the second-round playoff loss to the Ravens, like the big thing he hit on is like, we have to add to the defensive front. That's where I want us to be at our best, which I think – It's fairly obvious when you think about it. He was a linebacker. He relied on a badass defensive lineman, you know, holding up blocks and creating lanes for him to run through and make plays. So I think that's where D'Amico wants to put their money. That's what they want to allocate their most resources. And so far, I mean, we'll see when D'Amico Autry gets back. But I think the early returns have been that this is looks like a pretty successful strategy for the Texans.
Yeah, and you also look at what the San Francisco defense
did. Yeah, that's what they did.
Yeah, it is more – and I guess it's – you never know what the – how much a defensive coordinator has say in how John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, because I think he has a voice and stuff too there, how they want to build the team. You don't know if that's really what D'Amico Ryans wanted, and it looks like, yeah, no, that was D'Amico Ryans, or at least D'Amico Ryans also subscribes to that philosophy.
Yeah, that's the way he wants to build his defense. All right, we got to get out on the other side of the break. We'll keep track of, obviously, Texans, Giants as it goes along. Motor Singletary just picked up a big 10-yard run with the Texans' first-team defense still on the field.
Devin Singletary. Do you think he got booed or a standing ovation?
713-780-3776. Would you boo Devin Singletary when he faces the Houston Texans? All right, but when we get back, we will keep track of this. Still have a few more comments here and there along the way, but we got to get into the Astros with another loss to the Chicago White Sox and a death, maybe, or just slept wrong for Alex Bregman. I don't know what's going on with him, but that and more when the bullpen returns. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. So a little bit of update on the Texans before we get into the Astros. We thought, because, I mean, I read reports of it this morning, that Joe Mixon was going to play. Turns out Joe Mixon, Sean, is in what? What was the language that we're using for Joe Mixon as far as what he is wearing? What is his attire right now?
According to Cole Thompson, according DJ Bienname, and Cody Stoops. He is in street clothes.
And Aaron Wilson.
Aaron Wilson did not say
He didn't say street clothes. Everyone else is saying street clothes. So, yeah, it was because earlier just, you know, you don't see every second of the game while you're trying to also do a radio show. But I noticed Damian Pearson. I noticed Dar A.N. Didn't know it was Joe Mixon. Turns out Sean said he's in street clothes and not playing. So we'll have to continue to monitor the situation with Joe Mixon. Obviously, he's missed most of training camp. We thought he was making his debut today. Now, I will say there's no reason to play a 28-year-old running back in preseason, but it is notable that if they were telling us he was healthy enough to play and he was going to play and then he doesn't, just something to watch is all I'm saying. As the first-team defense still on the field right now, Texans leading 7-0, Giants with a 3rd-and-2, and trusting, of course, Daniel Jones get the job done. We'll see how that goes for them. So the Astros lose the baseball game last night. Giants do not pick up the first down unless they get the forward progress there with the whistle. We'll see. But, yeah, it looks like Motor Singletary picked it up. Damn. All right, so Astros lose the baseball game last night to Chicago White Sox. They did it again. Well, if you remember, I think it was back in June, the Astros went to Chicago, and the Astros, again, to the worst team in baseball, an historically terrible team. Mike O'Dan is the worst team ever in baseball as far as their win-loss record. They also dropped the first game of that series. Astros made a run of it after going down 4-1. Jake Meyers hits a two-run bomb. End up getting within one run, but do not come through with the win. So, I mean, overall, I mean, it doesn't really matter. The Mariners and Rangers both lost, so the Astros still retain their three-game lead. But it just feels like in a season where there's been a lot of down in the up and downs, although they were coming off an eight-game winning streak, whenever there's the down right now, it's easy for my PTSD to slip in. It's like, oh, God. It's like the gif we see from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, like, oh, bleep, here we go again. So I'm not saying that's the case, but there's a momentary moment in my head where I'm like, oh, God, we're losing to the White Sox again?
Yeah, there's a little bit of going in on an eight-game win streak and
feeling invincible.
Coming home, having the White Sox in town that you think, oh, okay.
Yeah, you just swept the Red Sox and the Rays, and now you got the White Sox at home. Let's go. And they lost.
Yeah, and then once they go down, I think they pretty immediately went
They were down like
4-1
pretty quick. Yeah.
And that's when you're like, actually, there's nothing more poetic than the Houston Astros having a eight-game road winning streak and then coming to Houston and immediately losing to the worst team
in
baseball.
On the same day of what, Sean?
On the same day.
Of news that they were repainting the batter's eye. We got batter's eye talk again, and it looks like Daniel Jones just threw
another interception,
which Johnny knows what my worst person in sports is. This is going to make this even more funnier.
Yeah,
Johnny.
Is that Young Stingley?
Yeah,
for sure.
I didn't see who it was. It is 24. That is Derek Stingley.
Wow.
Yeah. So Stingley had the near pick six on the first drive of the game where he stepped in front of a past,
Daniel Jones sucks.
Well, that is a bold take, man.
He is just so bad.
We promised overreactions. There's one for you.
Look at that throw. Like,
hey, John, finding the Defensive Player of the Year odds for Derek Stingley, because we're going to place a wager today at the end of the show. Derek Stingley, obviously going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Overreactions, baby. I mean, yeah, he's on pace right now. Well, actually, for zero. But
yeah, I was going to say,
Petrie are going to be fighting over it. Yeah.
On pace for 17 interceptions?
So, yeah, that's right, man. He almost had a pick six on that first drive. Derek Stingley, I do think, and we'll get back to the Astros in a second, the whole, like, oh, my God, you didn't take Sauce Gardner conversation. That is, if it hasn't already faded away, because I don't think it has completely, but that's going to become more and more of a thing that we just don't talk about. Because Derek Stingley, I think it was five picks last year, looked great. I thought in his first preseason action last week, even though he was only in for a series or two, the way he shadowed guys and stuck with them looked, amazing. And then obviously a near pick six and interception there. Derek Stingley is going
to
be amazing.
It was easy to say argue that Gardner was the better pick when they
first
got drafted.
Year one.
Because one, Stingley was hurt, and two, he was playing for a shambles of a Texans team that weren't using him in the secondary. Now D'Amico comes over, and look what has happened. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, Cam, over this whole
comparison.
What's up, Johnny?
I'm sorry, Cam. I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
Oh, did you?
Plus 15,000 is the odds for Stingley.
Plus 15,000?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got a little show back here?
I mean, I'll put
them
out.
We're going to take a trip out to Lake Charles soon.
You
guys are going end of August, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe a little show bet on Derek Stingley. Yeah, get some Defensive Player of the Year action.
Save me the money. I'll take good care of it.
When was the last time a secondary player won?
I would guess Darrell Revis, maybe.
No, there was one a couple years ago. I think Stephon Gilmore won it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, did Trayvon Diggs win it the year he had like eight interceptions?
No, because he also gave up a horrendous amount of yards.
Okay. I'm just trying to think
like the third most.
I would have guessed a guy like Ed Reed might have won one. I'm trying to think of other guys that could have won one in the secondary.
Yeah, Stephon Gilmore won in 2019.
He won 2019.
England?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the most recent. All right, Derek Stingley, plus 15,000. I think we're definitely going to get some action in on that.
Maybe we go Danielle Hunter.
Yes, a little sprinkle looking, with Danielle Hunter.
Looking through the years, it's a lot of defensive ends.
It's a lot of, sacks. Sacks are definitely sexy.
It's like the same thing with MVP. It's always.
It's a quarterback.
Yeah. Basically, defensive ends and Aaron Donald for the last 10 years.
Yeah. 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 And even one of the quote unquote defensive ends in there, JJ Watt, was mostly an interior pass rusher, too. So, anyway. But getting back to the Houston Astros, so they lose last night to the Chicago White Sox as the Texans take over literally on their 1 yard line.
Looks shadows like, of their goalposts.
Starting offense, I see CJ Stroud out there. They get nothing in the run game. You know what? Let's push the Astros off a little bit more. This run game, because there's a topic I had earlier in the show that we didn't get to, but I kind of want to get to it because it was one of my things. This run game is something that concerns me a little bit. So I asked the question, and that's certainly one of the options you can pick. Of all the reasons we hear about why the Texans could take a step back and maybe miss the playoffs or just have a lesser season than we were expecting, which one of the reasons you've heard rings most true? Like the Joe Mixon running game concerns, tougher division, the Titans get Calvin Ridley, year two for Levis, off the Anthony Richardson coming back. The questions on the secondary, obviously they didn't sign Justin Simmons. We don't know what they have there. The tougher schedule or a Stroud sophomore slump or anything else you've heard. Of any of the reasons you've heard why people think the Texans could take a step back, what rings most true to you?
I think honestly, I'm a big running game. It's like
you're an established guy. I've known this about you.
Yeah, but
you're an old soul, Sean.
A lot of times,
3 yards in a cloud of dust.
When you have CJ Stroud and the receivers they have, maybe you should just throw it more if he can't run it.
You know what it's like? It's kind of like what the Astros do for pitchers as we continue to blend the Texans and the Astros together. That's pro work there. I can see Cam appreciates it. Yeah. Johnny definitely appreciates
localizing
it. But when the Astros get in the pitcher, they did it just recently with Yusei Kikuchi, but they one of the ways they've turned around these pitchers is they look at their repertoire, what's working, what's not, like, that pitch sucks, stop throwing it. That pitch is good, throw it more. And that's what they did with Kikuchi. They're like, hey, that curveball to righties, terrible. Changeup, great. Start throwing the changeup more, and all of a sudden he's good. And it kind of feels what some of what we're talking about with the Texans, where, okay, if the running game sucks, all right, well, you got C.J. Stroud and Diggs and Nico and Tank and Dalton Schultz. Hell, we even liked the second and third tight ends, I think, with Brevin Jordan and Cade Stover. Just throw the ball.
Yeah, I think
Noah Brown when he comes back.
I think there's going to be a lot of games where they try to establish it, and then in the second half, they're like, when it's a close game, they're like, all right, enough establishing it. Let's actually.
We tried to be high T, but let's just throw the rock around.
That's why, I mean, for which to get back to the question of which ones it could be the reason or what could
yeah,
be
what
the reason.
Yeah, what rings most true?
I think honestly, and it's not like a very fun one, but it is. It is a tough schedule of just they already were at such thin margins last year to get to 10 wins and win the division that when you add in the fact how much harder this schedule is going to be. And, well, I guess this is kind of taking two of them. But the quarterbacks that they're going to play especially.
Yeah, you got Burrow. Well, you had Burrow last year. But
And the combination of the quarterbacks that you're playing plus the questions about the secondary and late in the season, you're really not getting a – not even late this season. Once October comes around, you're really not getting much of a, oh, okay, good, we're playing this guy.
Like the first half of the schedule.
It's all young quarterbacks.
Right, but then when you look over the second half, I know there's like a three-week stretch where they face, I believe it's the Chiefs, the Dolphins, and the Ravens all in like one go. The schedule, it really does set up to where the Texans need to be off to a good start to the season. Otherwise, things get a little bit dicey because once the calendar – once you get to Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween.
Starting with week 9, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Jared Goff, but the Lions are good. Dak Prescott, then you get a little bit of a break with the Titans and the Jaguars. You hit your bye and come out of it with Dolphins, Chiefs, Ravens.
Yeah.
Like they really need to be – not that any of those – other than at Chiefs, I'm not going to say any of those games is definitely a loss. But I do think, if they go into that stretch of games and they're just like one or two games above 500, then we like might need to be a little bit worried.
And it's a situation where they're really dependent on Caden Bullock to be good.
Yeah, they are.
For that stretch.
Yeah, because, you don't sign Justin Simmons, and that's pretty much – I mean, Bullock was really the only move to strengthen a secondary or a safety group that had some question marks.
Yeah, Lassiter and Bullock. So two day two picks.
Yeah.
I think it's a schedule for me too. I mean, I know that this current running back depth chart has some concerns for people, but for me, technically, you got better running back wise than you did last year. Like, I would much rather have Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, and Cam Akers over Singletary, Pierce, and Duare. Like, any day of the week. And, like, you don't have to have a great run game with the fact that you have C.J. Stroud. Like, if you can just have a slightly above average run game, even just a smidge better than last year, especially with the addition of Diggs, like, I don't see how anything on the offense would hinder this team. I think I'm with y'all. It's more the schedule and the quarterbacks that they have to play this year that is going to be the biggest obstacle.
I mean, to that point you just made, Cam, about you don't have to have a great running game to win. I mean, yeah. I mean, the Chiefs, post Kareem Hunt, what's been their great? I mean, Isaiah Pacheco was pretty good last year, but they haven't had a great running game, especially 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, when the Rams won the Super Bowl. That was post Todd Gurley. They didn't have a great, you know, dominant lead running back. It's just not something in today's NFL that you have to have. It almost kind of leans into what like a lot of people do in fantasy football, but the zero RB approach. It's like just load up, and then if you have decent at the running back position, like last year, like Devin Singletary was decent enough, and they got to the second round of the playoffs. So that's really all you need at the running back position. It's nice to have, you know, the guys like a Breece Hall or a Christian McCaffrey or Bijan Hookem. But you don't have to have those guys to win big. So we got to get out on the other side of the break. We will get maybe into a little more Astros. I don't know. This might just turn into a mostly Texans show until the second half when we get into some of the more fun stuff. But the bullpen will return in 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN.
97.5.
The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call or text at 713-780-3776 on the HRMP listener line. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Cam's at Clutch City Cam. Sean Mapes is at Sean A. Mapes. And Johnny Belmer behind the glass is on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. So getting into some Astros as the Texans start to put in the backups. We've already seen Case Keenum get into the game. So it seems like all the starters will now be removed as they get into the second quarter, which before we get to the Astros, Sean, I don't know what's happened to our game. Like, men used to play this game, and now they're leaving after the first quarter?
I thought this was the dress rehearsal game. I thought third preseason
Don't shake your head at me, John Belmer. I saw that dismissive look. Men used to play this game.
You sound like get off my lawn. Like, that was my initial reaction. That's why I rolled my eyes and shook
Aaron
my head.
Aaron Foster used to play into the third quarter of these preseason.
Who cares?
Matt
used to.
Schaub.
Who cares?
Bled. Sweat, shed tears on the gridiron for three quarters in the dress rehearsal, and now CJ is only going to come out for one quarter.
Maybe that's why he fell off a cliff. You know?
They're being unselfish and letting the backups play.
I'm just going to say this. If the Texans have a bad season, remember today.
Wow.
If the timing's not there week one, remember today.
Perfect practice makes perfect.
Damn right. Damn right.
Time to talk about the Astros.
Practice makes practice makes perfect. You know who's not practicing right now? Alex Bregman.
No, it's he's not.
As professional work. No. Johnny approves. He liked that. See? Johnny's back on my side now. So
this entire segment's been very professional.
So Alex Bregman, we get the news right before we're right at the end of y'all's show, and like right before our show starts, says like, oh, he's got some swelling in his elbow. He's going to miss the game. At least sounds like missed the weekend. He's going to address the media. We're all wondering, like, I don't remember seeing anything happening in the game. Like, what happened? He's on fire. It's obviously not affecting his performance. Like, what happened? Turns out, if you believe him, and obviously because it's the Astros and they lie to us every day, that you have to take everything they tell us with a grain of salt. Even though I will say this at least came from Alex Bregman directly. But it turns out, if you believe the story, Alex Bregman slept on it wrong. And it's been bothering him for a few days. So they got an MRI, no structural damage. And he will miss this weekend series and be back soon after that. I guess the first question we have to ask is, do you buy any of it? Because I think at the start of June, they told us, yeah, Kyle Tucker's going to miss a few days. And it's been 2.5 months.
Yeah.
And he's not even close to a rehab assignment yet. So I guess the first question, do you buy any of this with the story with Alex Bregman?
No, not really. I mean, he might have slept on it wrong.
Yeah. And Jeremy kind of nitpicked, and I got where he came from, that like anytime you have any soreness, like if you're a team and you can, I mean, obviously you can afford it, you're not a regular Joe Blow in the street, just get the MRI. Like there's no reason to not take the precaution and get the imaging done. But at the same time, when I read this report, like, and I put it in the perspective of like what I would do as a regular guy, like if I sleep wrong and my elbow is a little sore when I wake up, my first thought is, you know, let's go get an MRI to see if I did any structural damage. It just doesn't pass the smell test to say, yeah, I slept on it wrong, and I'm so worried about my arm being sore from sleeping on it wrong that I'm going to go get an MRI to check for structural damage.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that there wasn't like a single throw or a single swing of the bat that caused it. That just sometime probably after, I mean, definitely after the last Tampa game, either on their day off or Friday morning, there's some pain there or something, some swelling, some soreness, where there wasn't a inciting incident that they could point to, and so they just went with slept on it wrong. But then that just leads me, and this is probably part of the reason why Brian McTaggart and Chandler Rome get to ask the questions and I don't, but I would be like, so what? What day did you sleep on it wrong? Was
yeah.
Was it this morning or was it Thursday morning when they didn't have a game? I just
the Astros, you do have to pin them down.
Well, also if you're missing a game because you slept on it wrong, that means you slept on it wrong and it's still affecting you probably 12 hours after you woke up.
Yeah, because like, okay.
You wake up at 8 o'clock, you have a game at 7?
I think we've all, I mean me more so than others because I'm 40. But I think we all have, you know, got up in the morning like, I slept on it wrong. My back's a little sore. My neck's a little sore. Maybe, you know, the pillow was at the wrong angle. But it goes away over the course of the day. And again, like, Sean, to your point, to what I was saying earlier, like, one, if you believe the story, because he says it happened like a few days ago. He didn't specify the day, but it was like, I think he said 3 days ago, something like that. One, you would have thought, okay, well, that would go away by now.
Yeah.
And two, if you believe that it was from sleep, if that is legitimately what happened, like what would be the rush to get an MRI for structural damage? Like what structural damage are you going to do in your sleep? Yeah. You might make it sore. You're not doing structural damage.
That's why when I first heard this, I chuckled because I was like, there's no way he heard it while he's sleeping. He had to have agitated it before. I will say I can see where sleeping on it wrong further agitated and made it worse. And I say that because a few years ago, I fractured my elbow in a boxing incident. I didn't know that I had.
Look at this guy.
I didn't know.
You got a hard O drop? Just a humble brag. Let me rephrase that. You know, my elbow's a little sore. I was beating this guy's ass in a boxing match.
When I finished telling the story, you won't think that I'm a hard O. It was one of those boxing, you know, the boxing games that drops down.
Oh, yeah. So you're drunk. You're not a hard O.
No,
drunk. Okay.
The machine didn't recoil. So when I slugged it,
Yes,
I had been out drinking for my birthday. So my pain tolerance.
Uses one of those machines sober.
All that adrenaline, I didn't, like, it stung. I didn't know that I had damaged my arm, but I went home. I probably slept on it wrong, and the next morning my arm was locked in L. Obviously, I went to the hospital, found out that I had two fractures and a dislocation. But I can see how sleeping on your arm after you hurt it can further damage something. But I still don't think that he hurt it while sleeping. So
Cam, you hit on something that I think is the answer. You didn't exactly say it, but
punching back.
Well, yes, but yeah, one lesson is don't punch those punching bags at the arcades. It's a bad.
Oh, I won't walk near them now. It's like the same thing. I like my loathing of clowns. I loathe those machines.
Okay, those are two very separate things. Let's get more to that later. Maybe at 1:15. We gotta ask you about your clown phobia. But I think what probably happened here. Cam is shaking when I mentioned clowns. Pennywise.
I don't like them. It took me until I was 27 to watch It.
Wow. Okay. Soft boy. All right. Cam Smith. What I think happened here is, as Sean was mentioning, like there might have been, like they couldn't pinpoint it, but there might have been a throw or a swing that agitated the elbow. It wasn't necessarily that he slept on it wrong, but we've all done things like whether it be working out or maybe moving some furniture or something where you do something like, man, I'm going to feel that in the morning. Like once you go to sleep, once the body rests, you don't have the endorphins or whatever going, the adrenaline going, you know, that you're going to be sore when you wake up. That's what I think happened to exactly what you said happened to you, Cam. Like you didn't feel it in the moment, or at least you didn't feel it to the point of going to the hospital.
Yep.
But once you woke up, that's when it hurt.
Was very
I think
wrong.
That's probably what happened with Alex Bregman. So it's kind of a partial lie. He gave us part of the truth, but he didn't give us the full truth, which is very on par for the Astros. I think something agitated his elbow with a swing or a throw. He may have felt it a little bit, but thought nothing of it. Woke up, and all of a sudden it was more sore.
Because didn't we have another bed injury with Javier? Like,
well, Javier woke up with a well, – yeah, you're right. Javier, and this is why you can't trust the Astros, because when Javier – I guess this was back in May – Javier woke up with a sore neck from bad pillows in a hotel. Like, that's kind of the story we got. And it turns out, like, 2 weeks later, he needs Tommy John. Somehow, the sore neck from pillows in a hotel turned into UCL damage in his elbow.
They're going to come out with, like, some conspiracy that road team hotels are, like, doing stuff to the pillows to our players, because that's where they're getting hurt. Bregman was on the road, and Javier was on the road. So, something about these hotels, man.
I don't know. It doesn't affect Yordan. He's Babe Ruth on the road. Have you seen his home road splits?
Good point.
So I don't know. It's
bring your own pillow on the road trip.
Maybe he sleeps in a chair.
Okay.
You know, doesn't even take the rest. Just chills in the chair.
Think Yordan sleeps in the chair? He's that like, giant of a man.
He's like, I don't
he's
trust.
He's like 6'5", 250.
I don't trust these.
The
I don't trust these beds.
What type of chair? Hold on. You've been in hotel rooms before, right, Cam?
Yeah.
Have you guys ever been to a hotel room where it has like the courtesy chair next to the bed where it was actually a legitimate size where you could actually sleep in? There's no way a man the size. You know what I mean, though?
Well, like, I'm also 5'6", so I can pretty much sleep in any chair.
But those chairs in the hotel are always like the tiny
open
little
up a cabinet he can sleep in.
Yeah. like he's a dwarf from.
Or like that Michael Scott episode where he sleeps on that little.
Yeah, I can that imagine little... someone knocks up. Okay, I'm trying to get up, and he's like slide out the drawer. But those chairs are tiny in a hotel.
They're
like
small.
You can't even get your arms down because they're so like they're like that one. They usually don't even have armrests. They just have like that half one that kind of rolls around. So there's nowhere to put your arms. There's obviously no recliner to it. The back for to rest your head on it's too short. There's no way Yordan could sleep in those chairs.
That's a good point. I don't know. It's weird how I have never. I mean, I've heard of some weird injuries, like Hunter Pence when he walked through the glass sliding thing in his bathroom. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one thing.
I think he was going out to a hot tub.
I think
he's a baller.
There was definitely a lady with him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was partying with some ladies and trying to get out to the. He's trying to get out, you know, quick to the hot tub. So
he always hustled.
Yeah, he was definitely hustling.
Real hustler. So I can see that. But the fact that there's two.
But hey, the clock might have been ticking.
Injuries,
you don't know. I don't blame Hunter Pence. All right, we got to get out before we get in trouble here. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. When we get back, it's time for the hype train. Don't go anywhere.